2016 Person of the Year was President-elect Donald Trump. For 90 years, Time has named the person who's had the greatest effect on the world and the news, for good or for ill. This year, I think it is unquestionable that that is Donald Trump. Now, the debate over whether that's for good or ill is far, far less clear.
Lego is now vying with Barbie doll maker Mattel to become the world's biggest toy maker.
The company has quadrupled in size, and our strategy is one of purely organic growth.
The debate over the ethics of price hikes spans the Atlantic. Earlier Wednesday, British regulators slapped Pfizer with a record $107 million fine, alleging it charged unfair prices for an epilepsy drug.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Today is Thursday, December 8th, 2016, 5:10 in the morning. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell. Welcome to another business day as we close out the week. Friday is in our sights. It's tomorrow. Lots happening today, though, on the show. We have coming up our thought leader discussion. Don Lloyd will be in from Associated Bank. We're going to be talking about the global market situation post-election, whether or not all of this is really Trump-fueled or just election-fueled. We'll answer that question as we welcome and Don here momentarily. But first, let's go to the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. This morning, Dow futures pointing toward modest gains, up about 14 points right now. The NASDAQ and S&P futures are pointing higher as well. Crude oil also trading higher this morning, up almost 1% at 50.28 a barrel. In Europe this morning, all of the indices are higher. All of the arrows are pointing up. In Asia, all but a few are pointing up. Europe, the leader this morning, appears to be the FTSE in London. Also, we're seeing some really good stuff happening on the IBEX as well. And in Asia this morning, the Nikkei is up almost 268 points. That's good for almost 1.5% there in Tokyo, getting ready to close. Those markets about ready to close or already closing there as we continue to watch your money. We'll watch those numbers throughout the morning right here on 720 WGN. Some big headlines. China's exports grew in November for the first time in 9 months, while imports also rose, suggesting global and domestic demand are recovering. Also, Japan has released its newest trade and also GDP numbers. Japan estimating its economy grew at a slower pace than earlier estimated from July to September, expanding at an annual pace of just 1.3%. Donald Trump has made a few more nominations to his cabinet and to cabinet-level positions. Donald Trump will nominate wrestling executive Linda McMahon to serve as administrator of the Small Business Administration. Trump says McMahon will be a champion for small business, but critics say McMahon's past shows she is no friend of small business. She also was a multi-million dollar contributor to his presidential campaign. President-elect Trump is also nominating Oklahoma Attorney General Scott Pruitt to lead the Environmental Protection Agency. The 48-year-old Pruitt, a Republican, has been a reliable booster of the fossil fuel industry and an outspoken critic of what he describes EPA's activist agenda, also questioning whether or not climate change is really happening. So the markets have been doing really, really well since the election, and you often hear us in our news stories and business stories say it is Trump-fueled. But is it really? Maybe it's just election fueled. Our Associated Bank thought leader discussion today, Donald Lloyd, is with us today. Don is vice president, manager of capital markets, foreign exchange rates, swaps, commodity derivatives, all those good things at Associated Bank. He's with us this morning. Don, first let me talk a little bit about the markets. We've been doing well lately. You've been spending a couple of sleepless nights. Am I missing something? Why all the sleepless nights? And should I be aware of something that you know?
The markets are alive. The election is out of the way. It's behind us. And now the markets, I think, are coming back to the way they should be and have been waiting for this uncertainty to get out of the way. So I think the last time we spoke, and thank you for having me back on the show. I do appreciate it. But the last time we spoke, I think I used the analogy of the markets are like an amoeba, you know, a single cell organism that sort of moves one direction and then sort of moves another. And those movements are caused by factors in the market that drive it. And that amoeba is moving in every direction you can think of right now, because all of the markets are alive. If you look at commodities, if you look at equities, if you look at the debt market, everything's moving out there right now. And it's because we had this uncertainty, this election in the U.S., and now that's old news, past history. And now the market's refreshed. It can sit there and move capital, and it can start to look forward again.
What's doing good? What's doing bad?
U.S. is doing great across the board. Interest rates are up a little bit, but the equity market's flying. I think we're producing jobs here in this country. I think we've got some growth going on in this country. And what I always do is I compare the U.S. to other countries that are out there. And as I look around the globe and I say, hey, if I had some money to invest, where would I put it? It comes right back here to the U.S. And I really think that the U.S. is in a prime position to sit there for the next 10 years and have very, very strong economic growth, again, be a market leader. And as usual, it will pull the other countries up along with it. Overnight, you know, you saw the equity markets around the globe do very, very well because the U.S. is making new highs in equities. And I think we're going to get back to the 80s where the U.S. sort of led the way. The other countries followed. And I think all that investment money is going to be flowing right into here.
Well, I've been excited to have you back to ask you this question, because one of the things that sort of irks me every morning is when I hear people say this is the Donald Trump-fueled rally. It really isn't. I mean, no matter who won the election, we would see movement, right?
Completely agree. The markets were in gridlock, and all of this argument was going on, arguing whether it's Democrats, Republicans, Hillary, Donald, what's it mean, and just a really nasty, nasty, contentious election. And I think that seized the markets. I think it locked them up. And, you know, this is not a Donald Trump rally, you know, any more than it is anything else. It is a rally of this unknown is behind us. And it didn't matter if Hillary was elected. It didn't matter if Donald Trump was elected. It's this unknown is behind us now. And we'll see what happens as we go forward. But it freed up and released all of this capital to start moving around again.
And I certainly don't want to minimize Donald Trump's impact on stuff, because we saw this with Boeing this week, where there one little tweet lost Boeing about 1.5% in about an hour.
Right.
So there's a little bit of gravitas there.
Sure, absolutely. Well, a $4 billion aircraft will do that. Yeah. And but you're right. I mean, information moves so quickly now in the market, and the market just looks to absorb any type of news that it can, and try to translate into what does that mean for value? What does that mean for value? And sometimes, especially coming out of quiet periods and periods of uncertainty that we've been in, you're going to see knee-jerk reactions and you're going to see hyper moves one way or the other. The markets will settle down. It's like dropping a rock into a still pond. Those echoes will go out, but as time goes on, they diminish. They get quieter and quieter. So the market will revert back to a normal trading range. But it's fun right now. It's sort of like the Wild West going on.
Don, hang on with us. We're going to take a break here for traffic and continue our thought leader conversation with Don Lloyd of Associated Bank. He's the vice president and manager of capital markets. We'll talk more about what is doing really well and where you might be able to find some investment ideas as our conversation continues. On the Associated Bank WGN Market Desk this morning, we're seeing a lot of movers in our stocks of local interest this morning. Very few red arrows this morning, all green. One of the big movers is Archer Daniels Midland, up almost 1.5% this morning. Allstate Corporation is up almost 1%. And the Boeing Company, which we had been talking about, is up almost 1.5% as well, pre-market. It's 5:21 on the opening bell.
From ABC News, Wall Street now. The records continue to fall. The Dow soared 297 points yesterday to an all-time closing high of 19,549. The S&P 500 also set a personal best by gaining 29. The tech-heavy NASDAQ rose 60 points to end the day 5 points shy of its record close. Swedish furniture maker IKEA says it'll expand paid benefits up to 4 months for all its U.S. workers welcoming a new baby into their lives. IKEA says it wants to improve work-life balance for its 14,000 employees. Despite added airline fees and lines at security checkpoints, more Americans are traveling. One trade organization expects 45.2 million people around the world to fly between December 16th and January 5th. You think there's a Starbucks on every street corner now? Give it a couple of years. The Seattle-based coffee chain plans to add 12,000 new locations by 2021, including 1,000 Starbucks Reserve stores featuring specialty brewing methods and food. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to the opening bell. 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:23 as we continue our thought leader conversation this morning with Don Lloyd of Associated Bank. And Don, before the break, we were talking a little bit about how world markets seem to be reacting really positively and lots of things happening on your screens overnight and into the wee hours of the morning. We've been seeing a lot of talk about the potential of $60 a barrel oil. Is that something that you see coming on the horizon?
Sure, it's possible. We are trading right now as far as oil goes, you know, on the OPEC, news, you know, they're going to cut production. But how many times have they said that over the past 10 years? And how many times has oil production really been cut for any significant or lengthy period of time? The market's going to overreact first, which it has. It has reacted. But right now it's sort of like, let's see if they're going to follow through with what everybody's talking about. You've already have Iran, who's saying, no, you know, we're not going to sit there and look at this. Oil production, you know, we're still hurting from the sanctions that were placed in us, so we're not going to cut back our production. So you're already seeing Indonesia, you're already seeing them bow out. We'll see if they can hold it together. Production, oil production is the highest it's been. You know, Saudi Arabia is just producing oil, you know, hand over fist. If you take a look at their monthly productions. Not sure they're gonna cut it back too much, to be honest with you. So yes, to me, it's a sell. I mean, this rally that's going on, it's a good place to sell.
Yesterday, we had the president of the Illinois Farm Bureau on. They're having their annual meeting, and he said farmers across the board are just concerned about commodity prices. We had this wonderful crop this year. The harvest was really strong, but commodity prices are not where they need to be. Is that going to turn around at all any soon?
Good question. Look at the weather. You know,
right.
Forecast the weather out there right now, and I think that's where you're going to have the commodity prices go. So, you know, when it comes to the grains and when it comes to that, I'll leave that to those market experts that dwell in those markets and those specific markets when it comes to grains. At Associated Bank, we're not involved in the grains. You know, we're a customer-led strategy, so it's foreign exchange, interest rates, and commodities, oil, natural gas, those types of commodities, not the grains.
You talked earlier about how this is going to be good for the U.S. as we move forward. Yeah. We saw a little bit of that already. The head of Sprint, Japanese company that owns Sprint, sure, says $50 billion in the U.S., 50,000 jobs. Is that the kind of investment we're going to be seeing, these big chunks of? I mean, that's a pretty good get.
I think that's the value that a Donald Trump or a businessman is going to bring to this. I think he is going to be out there soliciting business and pulling that into the states and doing what's best for the country, you know, job creation. And, you know, we'll have to listen to him, you know, patting himself on the back as he does it. But that's okay. I mean, you know, it's pulling business back into the U.S., and I'd rather do that than set up a ton of tariffs, you know,
right,
to approach it in a negative light.
Sure.
Let's approach it in a positive light.
Well, and the other possibility, that possibility exists, is that we'll see these tariffs and the tearing up of these trade agreements. As somebody who has their fingers on the globe, how deadly or damaging would that be if we started ripping up these trade agreements?
Huge, very damaging. I mean, especially if you're in the position that the U.S. is breaking out, it's coming back, and is going to lead the globe. The last thing we need, you know, is to sit there and have a ton of tariffs. You know, if you're looking at a tariff of 45% on imported Chinese goods because they're viewed as a currency manipulator, that's not a good thing. Any time that you create obstacles to trade, but it's got to work both ways, that's not a good thing. Granted, you know, it is sort of lopsided, but the last thing you want to do is to escalate that and get into some type of a trade war that is going to be a drag on the global rebound that could occur, and with the U.S. leading it. So I would much rather approach it from a very positive light than from a negative light.
Because it is a two-way street. We want as much to bring stuff here, but sure, also if we don't send stuff elsewhere, we're not going to succeed.
Exactly. Again, it's all about job creation here. And I think with the businessman at the helm, I think he's going to bring that angle in his term, you know, as running his administration. He's going to bring that where it's going to be this, let's approach it from business, from a logical business position and get the economy going again. I mean, I really think that's going to be a benefit from it. You know, he's got some other things he's got to work on, but you know, I'll give him A pluses on that.
He also wants to remove some regulations. We've talked with some of your colleagues in recent weeks about the Dodd-Frank Act being pulled back a little. There's also some rulemaking regulatory issues involving commodities futures trading.
Right. Yeah. Think of these markets, you know, I always go back, you know, 2,000 years. And if you think of the marketplace 2,000 years ago, you know, Roman times, you know, you sort of had the open marketplace, and you had an area for grains and an area for maybe the silks and the materials and the satins. And you had this over here for pottery. And the markets that are traded around the world are very similar to that, except unlike 2,000 years ago, they're spread out all over the place. Mm-hmm. But you still go to these exchanges and you go to these markets, and they specialize in a handful of things here and there. But some markets are very large, some markets are very small, and some markets have many, many players, and some markets have very few players, some very large players, a handful of large players, and a lot of smaller players. Those regulations around the commodity industry that you were talking about there, I think those are geared and aimed at those markets where you have few large players that can really lock the market up if they have to. Now, if you take a look at the foreign exchange market, which is the largest market in the world, if you look at our debt market, you know, you have a lot of players that are in there, a lot of large players are in there. So a regulation like that is good. We want to keep the price action going. We want liquidity to go. And if you're dealing with markets that have large players, but not a whole lot of them, it's very easy to polarize that market. You know, one guy gets very long, one guy gets very short, and you know what? They just stand and they look at each other. And everybody else who wants to participate in it, they want the price action, they want the liquidity, and they don't get it. So that's going to break that up. Not really applicable to certain markets, mm-hmm. but is applicable to some.
So sort of like a log jam that's going to get busted up.
But Dodd-Frank, knee-jerk reaction again. Mm-hmm. You know, there's been a lot of regulations that have been written around Dodd-Frank that have gone out there. And quite honestly, as somebody on this side of the business that sort of sees it at a street level, you know, we read these things and we look for guidance. Okay, how are we going to apply these regulations? And what we get back is, well, that's how you define it. Well, okay, how I define it can be different from how a lot of other people define it. And there's a lot of talk at that street level. How are you approaching this? How are you interpreting this? And that's good, and that's healthy, but it's not going to create clarity anytime soon. We'll eventually get there, but it creates a lot of energy and a lot of attention focused on things like defining regulation and what's everyone doing, as opposed to, you know, creating value in the market and servicing customers and tending to positions or whatnot. So a lot of money's being spent there. I can really see those regulations starting to get called out a little bit. What's important, what's not important. And maybe there's been an overreaction or sort of throwing regulations on a board to see what sticks, to see how the market reacts and sort of vet through what's important and what's not.
So what would be under your Christmas trading screens as a wish? What would you like Santa to bring you for Christmas under the trading screens? Anything that we need that...
World peace, happiness, nice bonus at the end of the year, maybe. No, I don't know.
More green than red on the
screen. More green than red, more on the screen going up. I would just like to see the markets, you know, interacting, working together. And you know, it's really the only industry out there that can sit there and try to put each other out of work all day long and then go out and grab a beer at the end of the day and have a little giggle about what happened during the day. And so, you know, just that kind of camaraderie, that's what I'd like to see.
Peace, prosperity, and a good beer.
Exactly.
Sounds good. Have a wonderful holiday, and we'll see you after the new year.
Steve, thank you. Same to you.
Don Lloyd is a Senior Vice President, Manager of Capital Markets at Associated Bank, our Thought Leader Conversation for today. Remember, you can listen for more Thought Leader Conversations every Thursday at 5:08 here on The Opening Bell. And you can find past episodes at WGNRadio.com. Don't forget to follow Associated Bank Business at Associated Biz. It's 5:32.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. Do you ever tell Siri to tell you a joke, and is she funny? AI is getting a little bit more funny. We're going to talk a little bit about how that's happening. But first, a story kind of related to this segment. Congress has sent legislation to President Obama that would make it easier to get tickets to popular shows, sporting events, concerts. Lawmakers passed by voice vote yesterday in the House a bill that would crack down on computer software used by some ticket brokers to snap up tickets. These so-called bots rapidly purchase as many tickets as possible for resale, sometimes at significant markups. This morning, we're happy to have with us from Fast Code Design on the program, Catherine Schwab, who's written a story about the task of making AI funny. Catherine, good morning. Welcome.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Before we get into our conversation, I want to play for folks just maybe a sample of what you're talking about. Thanks to the folks over at Techno Buffalo. This is the Google Assistant trying to be funny.
What's your favorite car?
I like fast cars.
Can you beatbox?
If you want to freestyle, my friend has you covered.
Now I know how people feel when I tell them dad jokes. Can you sing?
La 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 la.
So, Catherine, why do we need AI to do all of these things, especially be funny?
Well, you know, it's a really interesting question because, you know, the Google Assistant isn't there to necessarily make us laugh, but users want to test it out, see what they can do, kind of push the edges of what they think of a computer. So, you know, asking questions like, can you sing, or what kind of car do you like, is a way to see what the limits of the technology is. So that's one major way I think that chatbots have been designed to be funny, because users really want to play with them. So this kind of entertaining element of it is something that the designers have really thought about.
Well, over the past year, you've written about how we've just seen all of these chatbots and virtual assistants grow. We have Alexa, we have the Google device that we're, you know, the assistant there. Siri, of course, is in there. I guess what we're headed to is a point in our lives and where all of this technology, we really do want an assistant that can interact with us on a number of different levels, right?
Completely. I mean, if you think about the evolution of technology, I mean, what was so great about the iPhone was that you didn't need a user manual. So the user interface was so intuitive that you could just figure it out as you went. And so if you think about, you know, interacting with technology, an old computer, and trying to figure out the interface, all the way up to today with an iPhone, you know, it's kind of self-explanatory. So the future of that, I think, and what bots and conversational interfaces are heading towards is an interface where, you know, the user manual, the interface has become part of your life. So the way that you would interact with any person, you know, none of us are taught how to have a conversation. So it's kind of, a lot of these tech companies at least are betting on the fact that that's the next wave of technology.
Without getting too heavy on us this morning, give us a sense of how, from a technical standpoint, how hard it is to develop something like this.
Well, from the writers, I mostly spoke to writers for this story, people who are thinking about kind of the flow of conversation and how you craft that. But so that from the engineering perspective, you know, they have kind of a flow sort of diagram. One of the companies that I spoke to for this article is called Polestring, and they are actually building a platform to make it easier for other companies to build chatbots. So they have their writers and their engineers working together to think about, okay, what is the right timing between interactions? If someone asks this kind of question, what are 10 different responses that might make sense for them based on the context of the rest of the conversation? All of these kinds of things have to be programmed and thought about. And so what's interesting about that company is they're trying to do this from both the creative perspective and from the engineering perspective. In terms of Google, you know, they have this wealth of knowledge sitting out there through their search engine that we all use so much already. And they're, the Google Assistant is kind of building a bridge you can access that through your voice. So it's a little bit different in terms of the thinking. But the engineering, you know, I'm not an engineer, but that's kind of the idea, is like there's some sort of branching tree and the writers kind of craft different responses based on that.
Yeah, and so, I think also in there you have somebody, a human, I guess, reading some of these phrases and some of the things that have been written to have delivered into that. But is there a time in the future when some of this might just be intuitive on the part of some of these AI bots?
Gosh, that is such a good question. I have no idea. I think because there's so much text and content out there in the universe already, and I think that's kind of the part of the strength of the Google Assistant, is that it has access to all of the stuff that has already been written and has already been indexed and cataloged. So it can access that. It'll be really interesting to see, though, if a computer can actually organically write a joke. I mean, that's seems so impossible from where we are now. I mean, at this stage, we still have people behind all of these different bots crafting their responses, thinking about, okay, how do I, get a giggle out of someone? But in the future, who knows? I mean, we couldn't have predicted where we are now. And who knows what the next 10 years will bring.
Yeah, and sort of I think maybe the Japanese were onto something too. They have these little robotic dogs that they're all very fond of that are sort of like part of their families. That may be where we're going. And the reason I bring that up is because I guess if you live alone and you don't have much interaction with people, this would be very good for you to have somebody or something that you could talk to, carry on a conversation with.
Yeah, and it's interesting. There's one bot, and I've been playing around with it a bit myself. It's called Poncho, and it's a cat. It sends you a notification every day, tells you the weather in your city, but then it kind of opens up dialogue. So, I spoke to the writers, the editorial team for the app, and they said that they get people talking about things that are, far away from the weather, just kind of chatting with the bot, having a conversation. And it can be very natural, and it's kind of fun to explore the personality of this other being that is really a character. It's been crafted, but it's still, it's something you can interact with in a way that, we can't necessarily interact with characters on TV and in movies.
Catherine Schwab is the writer of the article, The Daunting Task of Making AI Funny. You can find it at fastcodesign.com. Catherine, thanks for being with us on the opening bell today.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Dow futures now positive, up about 6 points. The S&P and NASDAQ futures higher as well, but just barely. The NASDAQ up just about 4.5. The S&P up just a half a point as we move toward the opening bell. Let's get the latest now on commodities and agriculture. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Let's start with the best news from yesterday's trade at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, where lean hog futures gained for a third straight day, led by upward trending cash and wholesale pork prices, and not as many hogs available for purchase, and cold weather will be holding down daily weight gains. So at the end of the trade yesterday, we had December live hogs up $1.45 a hundredweight, April live hogs up $2.15. Meanwhile, the cattle market went south again yesterday, not as dramatically as we've seen recently, but December lean hogs dropped 72 cents a hundredweight. January feeder cattle dropped 17 cents. That's December cattle down 72 cents a hundredweight. Turning to the grain market yesterday, wheat, corn down on ample supplies, and just a slight rebound in the soybean market. January soybeans were up 2 cents for the day, but the December corn contract was down 2 cents, and the December wheat contract was down 4.5 cents a bushel in yesterday's trade. Now, the news that Governor Terry Branstad was appointed U.S. ambassador to China takes one of the names off my Secretary of Agriculture list, so that list is still being looked at by the Trump administration, getting ready to move into the White House in January. But Governor Branstad, who I've known for decades, will be good for our China relations. Have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Now the Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for this Thursday, December 8th, 2016. Major business economic reports include the Labor Department's report on unemployment benefits over the last week. Freddie Mac also reports on this week's average U.S. mortgage rates. A couple of other things we're watching. The holiday air travel forecast is out today. Airlines for America releases that winter holiday travel forecast. Vice President Joe Biden is in Ottawa, Canada to meet with the Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. Also today, this is a day of the Immaculate Conception in the Catholic Church. Pope Francis offers a crown of flowers, which he'll then place at the statue of the Immaculate Virgin Mary. Also today, we get to see the American Film Institute Awards honorees announced, honoring the creative teams behind the year's 10 most outstanding movies and 10 most outstanding TV programs. That's the opening bell for today. We'll continue to follow your money throughout the morning on 720 WGN and in the Steve Cochran Show coming up next. Back with another edition of the opening bell tomorrow, bright and early at 5 a.m. I'm Steve Grzanich. Have a great day.